This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and joined as we normally are, early week. Good to have him back in the saddle, the one and only Adam Burke. Mr. Burke, I am here to dispel all of the rumors that I canceled Monday's show because of a dropped snap and a missed hold. I was a little bit out of town, and, you know, we are pushing this to Tuesday, but we have got a lot to get to. Updated power ratings up on VSiN.com, some situational spots, overreaction or market correction, a game that is sweeping the nation, Adam Burke, that we did last week with the Bear, Chris Felica. We'll bring it to the airwaves here today with you, but hello, sir. Good to have you back, man.
Yeah, good to be back. Had to go back home to Cleveland, take care of a little family matter. So good to be back. Good to be back at my desk. Good to be back out here in Las Vegas. And, you know, hey, man, each passing week, every time we get more data points on these teams, it should help us going forward.
No doubt about it. And, you know, we ran through situational spots, as we always will. That's something that I love to do. We have some unique ones this week. Some were able to hit, and some were, let's just say, not able to hit. I'm looking at you, Temple. You were terrible, and that was, I guess, should have been expected. But we push on. As always, please give us that five-star rating over on iTunes and a review. I've got a review I want to read that, man, it stung real deep. It was a five-star review, so I appreciate that. But also, it is worth noting, every episode now is going to be up on YouTube. So the College Football Betting Podcast now has its own YouTube page. So hit that subscribe button over there. Had a bunch of folks hitting that subscribe button, up to almost 50 subscribers. So let's keep that rolling here. So we're trying to take over the world one subscriber at a time, Adam Burke. But I want to read this five-star review, and you can always give us a five-star review. And I appreciate the five stars. So this one cut deep because one of my best bets last week was Georgia on the money line. Now, I did preface it by saying, hey, if $1.65 is a little bit too rich, find a dance partner for a Moneyline parlay. And lo and behold, that game is wild. And ultimately, Georgia wins in overtime. Tennessee's got to be kicking themselves by that. But Saban's Burner on iTunes says, best bet, -165, reminds me of Vegas Dave. Love the podcast otherwise. Oof. That is a, man, that's like a dagger to the heart. Buddy gave me five stars, so I will forgive. But continue to give those five-star reviews. Hey, I didn't want to lay the 3.5, and I guess it worked out. And I was very fortunate to get the Georgia money line home. But let's start with that game. What a crazy game. One of a number of crazy games. Adam, you've got your updated power ratings up on VSiN.com, as you'll do every week, and we'll look at those. What did you do with Georgia and Tennessee after that thriller in Rocky Top?
Yeah, I mean, just a couple point adjustment here. Up one for Georgia, down one for Tennessee. My line on the game was Tennessee +1. So, you know, I would have looked real smart if that kick had gone in at the end of regulation that had absolutely no chance whatsoever of going between the goalposts. One of the worst potential game-winning kicks I've ever seen. And of course, then the kid makes one in overtime that, you know, winds up being all for naught. But yeah, just a very, very small adjustment. You know, I mean, Joey Aguilar's looked really, really good. And obviously that was, you know, the right move for Tennessee to go ahead and let Nico walk. And, you know, they bring in Aguilar, who was really good at App State. And App State, by the way, looks pretty bad on offense this season. But, you know, it was the first time Georgia really got tested. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, they, in the game against Austin Peay the week prior, Georgia had zero explosive plays. So I was like, okay, is maybe Gunnar Stockton not the right guy for this offense? Are they maybe just kind of holding the playbook back? Well, then they went and dropped a 40 burger on Tennessee. And I was like, you know what? Maybe they just didn't want to show anything against the Governors. So I don't know, but it was an interesting bounce back performance for the Georgia offense. And I will say, though, I do have questions about the defense where they've had basically, what, 3 years in a row of pretty significant losses to the NFL. And then Tennessee hangs 40 on them. Yeah, that's a little bit of a concern, I think, going forward.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I didn't know what to expect, and we obviously discussed this game quite extensively all throughout the week, what to expect from Tennessee, because Josh Heupel has been a bully in these non-conference games heading into this one, 15-1 in his last 16 non-conference games, and Kirby's kind of the opposite. I will say, you know, not to get too, I don't want to say philosophical, but I felt like Kirby, you saw the growth in him as a head coach over the past couple of years. And look, he's a multi-time national championship winning coach. He doesn't need to grow that much more. But as they're getting kind of smoked offensively or defensively, it didn't feel like he was losing his you-know-what on the sidelines like we've seen him do before. And I think that is promising for Georgia. And we'll find out more about this Bulldogs team in a couple of weeks. They're off this week, and then they have the big one in primetime against Alabama at home. But I was impressed by both of these teams, no doubt. And the SEC, man, there are a couple of teams. Obviously, we'll get into South Carolina with the Lenora Sellers injury. Texas, obviously, with the questions at quarterback with Arch Manning's performance against UTEP. But man, you look at what we've seen from Tennessee, what we've seen from Georgia. And I'll say this, Adam. Look, I am bullish and have been bullish on Alabama heading into this year, and I look like an absolute moron week one when they go down to Tallahassee and get their ass kicked. But I would say, looking at what we saw on Saturday, and I don't expect much from Wisconsin, and Danny O'Neill is not a power four starting quarterback, but Ty Simpson's kind of looked the part these last couple of games. Granted, one was against UL Monroe. So both these teams will be off, Adam, this week. That's going to be a really fun one to watch in 2 weeks down there in Athens. Because I don't think Alabama, look, they put themselves in a tricky spot with that schedule to be 2-1. But that, even though they lose to Florida State, I still think Alabama's a pretty damn good football team.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. And look, you know, I mean, I loved the Kalen DeBoer hire. You know, I mean, I thought Kalen DeBoer at Washington, you know, was a top five coach in the country. And Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator who was the head coach at South Alabama, you know, he's kind of been with DeBoer throughout his career a little bit. I'm a really, really big fan of him as a DC. The week one game against Florida State, just, I mean, are we going to look back at this in week 12 or 13 and be like, damn, that was one of the biggest outliers of the college football season? You know, or maybe Florida State's just good. I mean, that's a possibility here, too. But, yeah, I mean, for Alabama to get things right, take out some frustration on UL Monroe, you know, I mean, whatever, it is the Warhawks. But still, you know, to beat them by that magnitude, to look a lot more buttoned up on both sides of the ball, that's kind of what a lot of people expected from Alabama coming into the season. And I think what a lot of people expected with Kalen DeBoer, maybe getting his stamp on this team a little bit more. I mean, remember, last year he basically just inherited a lot of the talent at Alabama from Nick Saban. You know, they didn't have a mass exodus through the portal or anything like that. Maybe now DeBoer kind of has the team that he wants. And maybe that's, you know, one of the growth potentials that we see throughout the course of the season here is this Alabama team coming together like they kind of have been over the last couple of weeks.
So I wanted to throw something by you, and we're going to dive into your power ratings, of course, every week. Check those out. One of the first really things that is out there from a betting standpoint after the week unfolds. But I was looking at DraftKings today, and they have this unique market that we talked about a little bit in the summer, and I ended up placing a bet on San Jose State to make the Mountain West Championship game. That's off to a great start, 0-2 to start the year, including a loss as a two-touchdown favorite in week one against Central Michigan. But Adam, I was looking at this market, and I'm sure the math folks can chime in, and it's probably not a plus EV bet, so I haven't made the bet yet. But Georgia Tech, fresh off of their win over Clemson, look at their schedule, because the remaining schedule for the Rambling Wreck is, in a word, quite soft.
Those are two words,
Tim. If you look at it moving forward, they've got Wake Forest. I'm looking just conference. Wake Forest on the road. Virginia Tech. How's that looking? At Duke. Home to Syracuse. At NC State. At Boston College. How's that looking? And then home to Pitt. So the remaining games here for Georgia Tech, they don't play Miami. They don't play Florida State. NC State looks pretty vulnerable. They don't play Louisville. They don't play North Carolina. Who the hell knows what they're going to be? They don't play SMU. Georgia Tech is plus 120 to make the ACC championship game. They're going to be a favorite in the remaining contests. And here's my one caveat. You know, I bet a bunch of people say, well, what if Haynes King gets injured? I'll tell you what, man, Aaron Filo is a pretty solid backup. So I haven't made the bet yet, But Georgia Tech, after that win, and now I believe Brent Key is 9-3 ATS against ranked teams since taking over as the head coach of Georgia Tech. I'm very intrigued by this Georgia Tech team, and the schedule shapes up very favorably for them to at least make the conference championship game.
Yeah, so as I look at it, I have them 16.5 point favorite against Wake Forest, 13.5 against Vatek, 3-point road favorite at Duke. That's probably the game that you have to circle there with, with being pretty worried about. 2-touchdown favorite over Syracuse, 5.5 against NC State, 8.5 against Boston College, who, I mean, they just lost to Stanford by double digits last week. That's a bad look. And then 10.5 point favorite to Pitt, who, of course, just lost to West Virginia, who lost to Ohio the week before. So the transitive property of college football really coming together nicely over the last couple of weeks here. But here's the thing, and I mean, this is just kind of narrative-based, so I don't really, I mean, I can't place this, you know, in factually anywhere. Again, they are favored in every conference game the rest of the way for me. But you mentioned it with Brent Key, right? They win in underdog roles.
Yep.
How will they do, you know, kind of being the hunted now, being the favorite in all of these games? So that's the question that I have. But look, I mean, the bye weeks are pretty well timed, I think. And again, I mean, like you said, they don't play any of the top teams in the ACC. That Clemson one was the one that they had to have to really give themselves a good chance here, and they got it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad bet necessarily, but it's also one of those things where, you know, as we just kind of talked about earlier on, like, how good is Florida State, you know, at the 3-1 price? Is Clemson dead in the water at 4-1? Or is there a way that, you know, Cade Klubnik and Dabo Swinney can right the ship a little bit? You know, Georgia Tech does have the head-to-head tiebreaker with Clemson now, which is definitely valuable when you talk about betting the +180 or +120 in this market. But again, I mean, I don't know. I don't have data points for them in this type of role where they have the expectations, really. So I get it. I get where you're coming from. I think from a strength of schedule standpoint, it makes a ton of sense. I don't know that this is a play that I can make now. I just don't know if there's enough equity at +120 on it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? Is there enough meat on the bone? And +120, right, you're not going to cash this in theory until early December. And I think that's a valid point, right? How is Georgia Tech now going to play in this new role, right? Where they are, they're not that pesky underdog. You think last year when they were catching points at home against Miami, pulled off that upset. Of course, this week, you know, we talked about it with the Bear. Is it an overreaction or a market correction with this number? I didn't ultimately bet it because the number just kept coming down and down and down. I'm like, my God, I mean, this is getting crazy here. And the market was accurate. I know you needed a walk-off 55-yard field goal to win the game there. Georgia Tech almost let that one slip through their fingertips. But, yeah, you look at Florida State's schedule, really haven't seen them and won't really see them this weekend because they play an FCS team called Kent State. I don't really know much about the Golden Flashes. I think they're – what conference are they in? Are they like an independent in the FCS? I'm not – all kidding aside, the Golden Flashes were competitive this weekend against Buffalo. So shouts to the boys from Kent. They actually showed pretty well against Buffalo.
You know what? Let me take this in the opposite direction with Georgia Tech.
Okay.
What about -230 no to make the college football playoff? Right? Because to
I got
make...
yelled at for laying -165, so I can't be saying -230.
That's true. Vegas Tim over here. But I mean, look. So if they make the ACC title game, they're going to have to beat Miami, right? Who looks like an absolute wagon right now. At least that's the expectation, is that they'd probably have to beat Miami. You know, I mean, if they don't beat Miami and lose to Georgia, they're not an at-large team to make the college football playoff. So, I don't know. I kind of don't mind, you know, no -230 on not making the playoff. And it's not, you know, that's not to say that, like, I have something against this team or something like that, but just... I mean, I have Miami, let's see, what would they be? I have Miami an 11-point favorite on a neutral in the conference championship game, and I don't see them beating Georgia. So if they don't beat Miami, they're not getting in. I think -230 to not make the college football playoffs is actually a pretty good bet on Georgia Tech.
All right, you heard it, Rambling Wreck fans. Adam Burke, a Georgia Tech hater. Make sure you send all the hate tweets to @SkatingTripods.
Shout out to Saban's burner on Apple Podcasts.
All right, let's get to your power ratings. And, you know, just give us a little bit of the making of the sausage. How aggressive are you being? Because I think that's the tricky thing, right? In this day and age, I'll give a kind of off the radar example. Utah State is much better than I anticipated this year. And Bronco Mendenhall has done a phenomenal job. You look at New Mexico on Friday night, maybe more of an indictment on UCLA, but the fact that Jason Eck has brought in 72 new players and they are competitive and have covered both of their games against their P4 opponents and obviously dominated their one at the Rose Bowl. So you've got your power ratings up, your adjusted power ratings. How aggressive have you been here in the early couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's a really fair question, right? Because the sport of college football is so high variance nowadays, you know, with just all of these teams with brand new players. Some teams are maybe gelling a little bit faster than others. It's a very difficult environment right now to try and rate these teams. But, I'll go through the three-step process that I have basically. The first step is I compare my line to what the line closed at. So I want to know how far off a market I was. Did it move in my direction? Did it move against me? And then I start making some evaluations from there. Second, I go through all the box scores. I look at the box scores on ESPN. I look at them on Game on Paper to get kind of the more analytics-driven box score that they pull off of ESPN's play-by-play data. And then the third step is I try to find as much injury information as possible, which is very, very hard usually on Sundays to find it. Coaches kind of protect these kids and their injuries. It's not like the NFL where you have the standardized injury reports for every team. I think certain conferences do have that in college football, but still, it's pretty difficult to find. So the biggest thing for me is if I'm going to be off market on a team, I want to make sure I have a really strong position on that team. I want to make sure it's not just a situation where I don't have them rated accurately. If I'm going to be off market, it's because I want to bet on that team or I want to bet against that team. So that's really, the stuff that I do on Sunday mornings, going through once all the results are in, all of that, and just, try to align myself with the market more often than not, unless I want to take a position. So in that respect, there are some teams that from their data points, I have been a little bit more aggressive with moving down. I mean, this is not one that's, off the radar or anything like that. I dropped Kansas State 5 more points this week. I've dropped them 13.5 points since week one. So this is a team that just Avery Johnson is not it. And it seems like that's pretty clear at this point in time. Chris Klieman's not really working the magic. This is a team that typically does very well recruiting JUCO transfers. Seems like they're not getting a whole lot out of those types of guys here so far. So, I moved Kansas State down 5 more points. And this was a spot, I think I had them a 1.5-point favorite against Arizona. So kind of in line with the market, but I put myself in a position where I'm either going to go against them or I'm going to stay off of their games because right now they just look terrible.
Yeah, Kansas State has been one of the biggest disappointments in college football this year. You think about opening up the season as a favorite against Iowa State. Okay, that's understandable. It's a sloppy game. You come back home. You barely beat North Dakota. All right, that's a decent FCS program, terrible spot. And then you blow a double-digit lead to Army, who had just lost to Tarleton State the week prior. And then that game on Friday, if you just look at the score and didn't watch the game, you'd say, all right, competitive game. One. And Brent Brennan gave Kansas State every opportunity to win that game, settling for a late field goal, giving the ball back to Kansas State, and they just could not do anything. How about this? 193 total yards, 8 first downs. It was an absolute ass-kicking. And when you looked at post-game win expectancy against Iowa State, I think it was like 77%. And you looked at it for Army, I think it was like 65 or 66%, somewhere in that ballpark. I haven't looked it up yet from Bill Conley for this week, and I'll start diving into that now. But yeah, Friday night was kind of the last straw with me on Kansas State, and I don't know what the hell this offense is. Like, Avery Johnson, Adam, is an elite athlete, and they're not running him. And I don't know if it's Colin Klein being gone for a couple of years as their OC. He's now at A&M, but I don't know what that offense was on Friday night. And maybe I need to give a little more credit to Arizona because I was low on them coming into the year. But that was a whooping, man. And the score was not really indicative of how poorly Kansas State played in that game.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really tough about Arizona, though, is, I mean, it was an ass-kicking, but also, as you mentioned, I mean, Brent Brennan gave Kansas State every opportunity to hang around in that game. Arizona's just not a well-coached team.
And well, I think that's JVT about that. He is the champion of anti-Brent Brennan sentiments.
Well, and look, I mean, you know, you mentioned the 193 yards. Kansas State had a 75-yard touchdown run in that game, and they had 193 total yards. So I guess maybe the issue here, and, you know, I wanted Ohio State last season to run Will Howard a little bit more early on in the season than they did. Ultimately, it probably wound up being a good thing that they didn't, because they went on and won the national championship. But maybe this is a spot for Kansas State where you look at the depth chart at quarterback. They have a junior, you know, from South Dakota, and they have three freshmen. So maybe this is a situation where they're like, you know what? We don't want to run Avery Johnson because we don't have anything behind him. And I think that was the case for Ohio State last year, because Devin Brown transferred to Cal and couldn't even win the job over there. So,
hey, you know, JKS is the real deal, JK, man. That kid is legit.
He is the real deal. but I think that maybe that's the thing where Kansas State's like, you know what? We don't like our quarterback room. We don't really want to put Avery Johnson at risk. But now all of a sudden, you're at risk of your season completely slipping away. I mean, Kansas State is expected to make bowl games. They're not necessarily expected to win the Big 12, but they're expected to make bowl games. And looking at their schedule the rest of the way, I don't see it. I just don't see it happening for them just because of how far they've fallen off now. I mean, with my adjusted power rating, based on all the adjustments I've made here throughout the course of the season, I now have Kansas State for 5.04 wins. And that would not get them to a bowl game.
They are now 55-1 to win the Big 12. At DraftKings. And just a reminder, if you want to look at it somehow glass half full, Friday night was a non-conference game, so they're technically only 0-1 in conference play. But yeah, I don't know anyone out there who is racing to take 55-1 on Kansas State. So a big adjustment there, 5 points down. The two teams that fired their coaches, let's get to those, Virginia Tech and UCLA. I did a bit of a rant last week on the pod. I've done it 2 weeks in a row. I think Virginia Tech fans weren't even mad at the rant that I said. We got to stop with the whole, hey, Enter Sandman's intimidating. It's not. It's cool. You know, it's a cool entrance. And then you go out and you get absolutely curb stomped by Old Dominion. So shout out to the Monarchs and that win there. But this was the move they had to make. And Brent Pry is gone. I don't know who's going to be the next head coach. You've heard different names. I think Bob Chesney, the James Madison coach, can make a lot of sense there. The success that he's had at Holy Cross and now early on with JMU. But they got time to figure this thing out. Virginia Tech is, and maybe this is one of those situations where it invigorates the team, because if you look at the last six quarters of football, that team quit. Like at halftime at Vanderbilt, I don't know what happened, but that second half was one of the more dominant halves of football I've seen between two P4 teams, as Vanderbilt just scored every single time and Virginia Tech got three and outs left and right. What did you do with the Hokies, and what do we expect from this Virginia Tech team moving forward that Philip Montgomery is now the interim?
Yeah, 4.5-point drop for me, but again, this is probably, you know, addition by subtraction here with Brent Pry. So I gave them the big drop because, as you mentioned, I mean, the last two games have been really, really bad. When you get boat raced by Old Dominion at home, that's definitely not a good look at all for your program. Now, Philip Montgomery does have some head coaching experience, was the head coach at Tulsa, and in fact, had a little bit of success at Tulsa before things kind of all fell apart for him. But there is no excuse. There is absolutely no excuse for having Kyren Drones on your football team and having under 5 yards per play so far this season on offense. So we'll see what Montgomery does. We'll see if he kind of unlocks something with Drones, unlocks something with the offense. But to your point, yeah, I mean, this has to be a relief for those players. Now, of course, keep in mind, one of the things that we have to follow along with here is that when a coach gets fired, the transfer portal opens up for 30 days. And because it's so early in the season for both Virginia Tech and UCLA, guys that transfer out are able to take a redshirt year if they want to, because it's, you know, just now week four, they've only played three games. So keep that in mind, that we're going to have to wait and see what kind of exodus there is from some of these teams, or from, you know, at least these two teams, and maybe whoever else, if there are additional coaches fired here in week four, Or maybe guys are still able to redshirt, something like that. But that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on here for Virginia Tech, where Philip Montgomery is probably not the long-term solution. So that program's in a state of flux right now.
Yeah, and look, I don't blame any of those players. It's a unique situation, and you haven't played four games yet. If you want to save your red shirt and save a year of eligibility on what is an absolutely lost season, then you do it. So, yeah, that's certainly something to keep an eye on with UCLA and Virginia Tech. And if these players hit the portal, if they have, you know, magical injuries, whatever it may be. Virginia Tech, by the way, plays the Wofford Terriers, who rock in 0-3 in the FCS. And we'll see how that game plays out. Maybe that's the final game for some of these Virginia Tech players. You play it out with your buddies, you beat the crap out of an FCS team, and then you walk off into the sunset. We'll see. But going over to the UCLA, you know, a lot of fodder this weekend after just recapping the games is, you know, what job is better. To be honest, as betters, we don't really care. It is kind of fascinating when you look at the UCLA situation. I think Virginia Tech is probably a better job, but you have the money aspect with the Big Ten money versus the ACC money, and that plays into it. But this UCLA job, it was kind of put into a weird situation a couple years ago when Chip Kelly left to go be the OC at Ohio State. They hired Deshaun Foster. I think we all knew that was not going to play well. There was a workout well. And Adam, I would say late last year, though, I had a little bit of like, wow, maybe this UCLA team might actually be something with Deshaun Foster. They remember they went to Nebraska and they beat the Cornhuskers. They had a couple of competitive games, but then you watch them get obliterated by Utah. And then the Friday night performance, I mean, he had to get fired after that. That was embarrassing. I mean, to get absolutely punked by New Mexico, and they were just running the ball down their throat all night long at the Rose Bowl. So what did you do with UCLA, and what should we make of this program moving forward? Are they going to win a game this year? They're 0-2 against the Mountain West.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'll answer the first question. 3.5-point drop for UCLA, but this is a team that I had already dropped multiple times heading into that week. So not really a big surprise to see Foster gone. And obviously the timing makes sense too, right? You got a bye week here, and then you get into Big Ten play. So you're hoping that maybe you can kind of salvage something a little bit. I think there's a couple of really interesting things at play here. I mean, first, like, I kind of wonder what the vibe is or what the acceptance is of Nico Iamaleava coming over with such a big price tag, you know, in the transfer portal when he went to Tennessee, and then like nobody was lining up to take this guy. You know, he winds up going to UCLA for much less money. And of course, you consider, you know, California taxes and all those kinds of things. Like, didn't really work out super, super well for him. No. So you kind of wonder, like, you know, how things are going to fare here, you know, the rest of the way with this roster. I mean, is this just a roster with a bunch of square pegs and round holes? And, you know, maybe nothing's going to get better here. To your point, the smallest underdog role I have for them is 6 at home against Maryland, 6.5 in week 5 against Northwestern. Every other game, 14 or higher for them, 37.5-point dog at Ohio State. It's going to be bad for them the rest of the way. Now, Tim Skipper is the interim head coach. He does have a little bit of head coaching experience filled in there at Fresno State. So we'll see. But, I don't know if it was Stuart Mandel or somebody who I saw talking about this on social media. Like, this is not a very attractive job. You know, I mean, they're in the Big Ten, which is great, but they're overshadowed in their own city by USC, you know, in terms of Big Ten teams. They care more about the basketball program. They're much more of a basketball school at this point than they are a football school. Like, this is not a great job. I'm really curious to see who they end up getting to take this one here at the end of the year, because Skipper, again, much like the situation at Virginia Tech, not a long-term solution.
Look, if you can get DeAnton Lynn, you'd make that hire right now. You know, he is, in my eyes, an elite defensive coordinator, obviously ties to UCLA. USC poached him away. But to your point, like, is this a job he's going to want? It's a Big Ten job. So, you know, we'll see. I heard Jonathan Smith thrown out there. I don't think he leaves Michigan State, even though he has ties to the West Coast, to go to UCLA. I think he realizes better. How about this, though? Post-game win expectancy against New Mexico, 0.8%. I mean, it was no fluke. That was a whooping. And even the loss they had against UNLV, Postgame win expectancy, 9.5%. This is a team that is just not playing good football right now. So we'll see ultimately how it plays out here. Obviously, you could read all of the teams that Adam has moved up and down. Let's get to some positivity here. Teams that you've moved up, and I know you wrote a little bit about Missouri and Bo Pribula. I didn't know what to expect from him, and he's kind of exceeded my expectations here. So Missouri, how much did you move them up here to start the season?
Yeah, 4-point bump for Missouri here, and I also dropped South Carolina 4 points, and now I'm right in line with the market. So I'm pretty happy with the adjustments that I made for both of those teams. The Gamecocks, just they were overrated coming into the season. But Missouri, I mean, are they a wagon? Like, are they going to be really good? I mean, we haven't seen them necessarily get tested. I mean, they did win that game against Kansas, but I don't think we've really seen them get tested yet. I still think South Carolina's got a pretty good defense, so we'll see how this offense fares this week. But I don't know. I've been very, very impressed with this team. I've been impressed with Eli Drinkwitz and the job that he's done there at Missouri. And maybe Pribula's, I don't know, is it ridiculous to say, and I'm not a Drew Aller guy, so I'm going to put this out there first. Is it ridiculous to say that maybe Penn State kept the wrong guy? Like, they were never going to let Drew Aller go, and people are going to talk him up as a first-round pick. But I don't think Drew Aller is that good. I really, truly don't. Maybe Pribula is that good.
You know, and once again, like you said, they've played Central Arkansas, Kansas, which is a good win, and they got the late cover there that was shown on Bad Beats, and then a very bad Louisiana team. Adam, I don't know if you've ever seen a box score like what we saw with Louisiana. And I know this is a team that you noted in your power rating down. Louisiana, of course, lost Walker Howard, who was once upon a time a highly touted prospect. And Daniel Beal got the start, 1 of 8, 5 yards. Lunch Winfield, hell of a name, 1 of 6, -1 yards. Louisiana's quarterbacks, 2 for 14, 4 yards in the 52-10 loss. I don't know how the hell they found the end zone. Zillin Perry, apparently, an 84-yard run was the lone touchdown in the game for Louisiana as they lost 52-10.
Well, and not only that, you look at Walker Howard's performance in that season-opening loss to Rice, 10 of 22 for 88 yards and a pick. Walker Howard originally recruited to LSU, transferred to Ole Miss, didn't play there. Now kind of gets this opportunity at Louisiana and winds up getting hurt. Yeah, 5.5-point drop for the Raging Cajuns for me. But yeah, I mean, that was a box score the likes of which I haven't seen in a very, very long time.
How about Ahmad Hardy, man? This dude has been quite the addition. You mentioned Eli Drinkwitz, and shout out to Humans. He wrote up Missouri in the SEC, and he was all over Missouri's over win total. Hasn't gotten there yet, obviously, but Ahmad Hardy's got over 100 yards in all 3 games, a transfer from UL Monroe. 22 carries, 250 yards against the Raging Cajuns. Quite the performance there from Ahmad Hardy. So, yeah, Missouri, fascinated to see this team when they take on Alabama October 11th, and they get South Carolina this week. We'll dive into a little overreaction or market correction on the other side. Also hit on a couple situational spots. But just a reminder, if you're watching with us on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. You also could see this lovely hat that I'm donning. It is from Rainbow Authentics, our proud sponsor of this podcast, the official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards from your favorite Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You'll be capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear like the hat that I'm wearing and a bunch of other pieces, I heard some new pieces could be in the works. Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best every game day. So head on over to rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. You like this hat, right, Adam?
Yeah, that's a sick hat. Full disclosure, I asked you before we started recording, I said, what kind of hat is that? And then you told me it's from Rainbow Authentics, and That's pretty sick, man. I'd like to get my hands on one of those.
All right, we will. We'll reach out to our people. We can get Adam geared up. RainbowAuthentics.com. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, overreaction or market correction, some situational spots and early bets that we've already placed. We'll do that on the other side of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we keep rolling. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, three episodes every week. The early week episode, myself, Adam Burke. The midweek episode, Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, as well as an update with Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews. And then the Thursday podcast, myself and Matt Newman's running through our betting cards. Mr. Burke, you are the man who runs things over at the VSiN website. We've always had a great intro offer. What do we got rolling now for folks if they want to become a VSiN Pro subscriber?
Yeah, $9.99 intro offer. So your first month for under $10, and you get a chance to look at everything that we have to offer. We're also in the process of adding some new betting tools, subscriber exclusive betting tools that you can use for the NFL, for college football as well. So definitely excited about that. And look, I mean, we're talking college football here, but obviously we cover NFL, Major League Baseball, UFC, NASCAR, golf. We cover it all, especially, you know, Ryder Cup coming up next week. And also, you know, for that first month, just so happens that our 2025-26 NBA betting guide comes out October 7th. So we're very much looking forward to that. NHL team previews from Jonathan Davis in our website only NHL betting guide, starting to get posted here later on this week. So, you know, those seasons will be here before we know it, and you can just get unfiltered access to everything for $9.99 for your first month and see if you want to stick around.
I would recommend you stick around. Add all of our
picks. I recommend that as well.
Throw that out there. But all right, we did this last week with the Bear. I think I'm going to do this every Tuesday, and you kind of do this with your column every week as well. So DraftKings puts up about 10 to 12 look-ahead lines every Wednesday. It's actionable. You can bet it. And if you bet Missouri -3, you'd be feeling pretty good right now with the Lenora Sellers injury. So I want to play this game every week. Maybe we'll get some fun graphic for it. Overreaction or market correction? And the overreaction actually was, I guess, market correction. Tennessee, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson was accurate with that big move. So let's start with a game that I know that you've written about. SMU and TCU. So this game last week was SMU +4. And now most shops have SMU +7. This is the old iron skillet game, a rivalry game. And SMU in a classic middle sandwich spot last week very much played with their food against Missouri State. SMU is catching a full touchdown against TCU. Overreaction or market correction?
I think this is a little bit of an overreaction. I still have this line sitting at 4. So, you know, I was kind of waiting to see if maybe I could pull a 7.5 out of this number. But I think it's 7. It's still certainly playable for me. I mean, look, you know, I think it's always interesting to see line movement on these types of games where SMU at least played a game last week. They played a Missouri State team that, you know, actually looks a little bit better than I expected. I had over 61 in that game, never wound up coming through. But TCU didn't even play. Really? I mean, they played Abilene Christian. Like, they didn't play anybody. And they had a bye the week before. Like, I don't know what TCU has done here to this point to push this line all the way out to 7. I think SMU is the side. Maybe they get blown out. And I do love Josh Hoover. I think Josh Hoover for the Horned Frogs is an outstanding quarterback. And I think 7 is too high in this one.
All right, let's get to another game that has a lot of interest. 3:30 Eastern in Norman, almost said Stores. I don't know why. Stores, Connecticut, Norman, Oklahoma. I'm all over the place. Oklahoma and Auburn, the Jackson Arnold revenge game. Looks like 1-7 has just popped up at Caesars Sportsbook. Oklahoma laying 7. Last week, DraftKings had this line 4.5. Overreaction or market correction on Boomer Sooner hosting Auburn?
I love this game. I'm so interested to see what happens in this game, especially with the whole Jackson Arnold angle. I mean, I think that's really, really fun. I still think this line is short. I have Oklahoma 7.5 point favorite, so I still think it's 6, 6.5. It's short. You mentioned a 7 popped. I tend to agree with that. I don't really know what Auburn is at this point. I mean, I have a pretty good idea of what Oklahoma is. I don't know what Auburn is. I mean, Ball State is probably their bottom five team in FBS. South Alabama, that was not a thoroughly impressive performance for Auburn last week. I mean, I know that they were leading 28-9 at half, and they kind of packed it away a little bit, but just not a whole lot of explosiveness from Auburn in that game. And well, I'm honestly against Baylor this week. I think the wrong team is favored. I like Arizona State in that game. So I'm not impressed with Auburn's body of work here so far. Like I said, I have Oklahoma minus 7.5, and I think anything under a touchdown is good on the Sooners.
Well, I want to get to a game late night, Friday night. Saturday night. USC and Michigan State. This game is the 11 p.m. Eastern kickoff, and we've seen this number go from 14.5 out to 17.5. I'm mad at myself for not betting Youngstown State last week. I thought it was a massive letdown spot with Michigan State winning in double overtime and really being wildly fortunate to win in double overtime. Jonathan Smith, if you think back to his days at Oregon State, really thrived in the underdog role. 17.5 point favorites are the Trojans at home. They've been the bully so far this year. They go out to Purdue, they win, but don't cover. That was a good call by Matt Eumanns on that, taking the points with the Boilermakers. Is this a overreaction or a market correction going from 14.5 to 17.5 with USC against the Spartans?
I think this is a bit of an overreaction. I mean, USC failed to cover last week. They were +3 in turnover margin. Purdue had under 2 yards per carry. And Devin Mockabee's probably their best offensive player. And they had under 2 yards per carry in that one. And USC still couldn't cover the number. I also have problems laying big numbers with Jaden Maiava, where he's a guy who just, he puts the ball at risk. You know, his turnover-worthy plays are just too high for me to really like it a whole lot. USC also 4-for-4 on fourth down last week. Otherwise, that one probably would have been even closer. But that being said, I mean, you've got a brutal travel situation for Michigan State here. Playing super late, you know, their first road game. We saw the road teams, you know, coming east last year in the Big Ten, in the ACC, really, really struggle with that long travel. And we saw the teams going east to west, you know, kind of struggle with that travel as well. So I want to take Michigan State here. I really do. But I don't know if I can do it with the spot. My number is 16 on this game. So I was a little bit higher than the open, a little bit lower than where it sits now. But I don't know, man. I think USC is a little bit overrated market-wide here already, just because when you hang 73 on a team and 59 on a team, it's super impressive. Well, Missouri State's not very good, and I hate Georgia Southern this season. So another team where I think the body of work just isn't super impressive thus far.
Yeah, this is, I guess, a little bit of a look-ahead spot. Illinois, as crazy as it sounds, they are a top 10 team right now. We'll see how they fare this weekend against Indiana. Big one there, primetime in Bloomington. But USC goes to Illinois for a 9 a.m. Pacific kick, noon Eastern kick time next week. So maybe a bit of a look ahead, but not ideal travel situation, certainly for USC with the late night Saturday game, early Saturday game the following week. All right, couple more I wanted to hit on here. Overreaction or market correction. We haven't mentioned Notre Dame yet, so let's get it out of the way. Notre Dame hosts Purdue, and this was 30.5 last week, and I can't remember if I said it on primetime. I think I said you probably should take that win or lose. This is a pretty tricky spot for the Irish. Barry Odom's a good coach. They just don't have the dudes yet there in West Lafayette. But this is a big old number for a pretty leaky defense. But I will caution this. Last year, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois and then went to Purdue as a 7-point favorite and won 66-7. Now, Ryan Walters, good DC, terrible head coach. Purdue was horrendous a year ago. We just didn't know it at the time. Is this a overreaction or a market correction going from 30.5 down to 26.5?
I have it 28, so I'm right in the middle here. So I'm pretty content with where I have both of these teams. I mean, as I just mentioned, I mean, Purdue was -3 in turnover margin, all three interceptions, under 2 yards a carry, still found a way to cover against USC. And Barry Odom is a guy who's been a very smart defensive mind throughout the course of his career. So, you know, I think he's got a chance to maybe slow Notre Dame down here a little bit. Notre Dame, I think there's still questions at the quarterback position. I've been surprised at how Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and Aeneas Williams really haven't been, you know, as explosive as I kind of expected them to be. On the other hand, I mean, Miami might be a wagon. Like, Miami might just be a juggernaut this season because Carson Beck looks phenomenal. And Texas A&M's a really good team, too. And, you know, Marcel Reed is a dual threat type of quarterback, whereas Ryan Brown is just going to kind of stand there in the pocket. He's mobile adjacent, mobile enough, but he's not the type of potential playmaker that a Marcel Reed is when he gets out there on the run, something like that. So I kind of like Purdue plus the points just because Notre Dame's defense clearly seems to be missing some of the guys that they lost from last year. But this might also be one where Marcus Freeman just lets out some frustration on somebody. So I think it's a bit of a tough handicap, but I tend to agree with the line move coming down.
I understand the line move. It's a bad spot. You know, you're coming off of a just brutal loss in so many ways. You know, you drop a snap on a extra point, the defense. I mean, I joked with a couple of my buddies who cover the team, and I said, did Marcus Freeman think about declining the holding on the kickoff return? Because in theory, if they just allow that kickoff return to go back to the house, they get the ball back with 2.5 minutes to go, and maybe they win the football game. So I don't want to go into full rant mode here. People probably don't give a shit about my feelings on Notre Dame and a team that went to the championship a year ago. But, man, to see everything that Al Golden had going with this defense a year ago, and yes, they lost Xavier Watts, they lost Benjamin Morrison, they lost Jack Kaiser, Howard Cross, Riley Mills. They lost a lot, and they lost a lot of leadership. But, man, Marcus Freeman's made some really good hires. I really believe it. Al Golden being one of them, even though people are saying that it was Jack Swarbrick, the former AD, who made that hire. But I look at some of the positional coaches he's brought in. They've been good. Strength and conditioning coach seems like it was a hit. This is a miss. And I honestly, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, Adam. They should fire Chris Ash today. This is an abomination, what this defense has become. And it's not just they look confused. They can't tackle. And it's stunning to me to see the drop-off so drastically. Now, what you can say from an offensive standpoint, if you're looking at a glass half full with Notre Dame, or a defensive standpoint, the best two offensive lines they're going to face, without a doubt, are Miami and Texas A&M. And, you know, now moving forward, you've got a pretty manageable schedule. I know there were jokes out there, you know, just wait until we have conversations all over the next 3 months regarding a 10-2 Notre Dame making the playoff. I get it. You know, it's very possible, but they got to figure things out defensively, man, because they go down to Arkansas, and that's an offense that's humming right now. I know they lost to Ole Miss over the weekend, but Talen Green and Bobby Petrino seem to be kind of rolling down there. So, man, this Notre Dame team defensively, it's kind of sad to see, to be honest, for me as a Notre Dame fan. I'm sure there are plenty of people who have big grins on their face loving it, which I totally understand. But you got to downgrade this team. And I guess the positive, Adam, for me was to hit an over in the first half was enjoyable, at least to have my best bet come home in the first half of that game, because, man, that was pretty wild to see. I mean, look at the stats real quickly on Marcel Reed in that game. He was 17 of 37 for 360 yards. I mean, it was unreal. And guess what? He missed some wide open dudes. Like, there were points left on the field, it felt like, for Marcel Reed and this offense. So we'll see how good Texas A&M is. But, man, that defense is beyond leaky right now for Notre Dame.
Well, I think this brings up a really important point, right? That they are effectively a 4-touchdown favorite, you know, in this game. And I think a lot of people, you know, that observe college football, that bet on college football, they just kind of bypass, you know, the results in games like that, where if it's supposed to be a blowout and it is a blowout, like, oh, okay, well, whatever, that was the expected outcome. But when you've got a team like Notre Dame that, again, I mean, they played, well, I don't know where Sagarin has them, but it's probably a top five strength of schedule in the country here so far. Like, if you go out there and you win this game by 40, like, to me, that's a good thing. You know, yeah, you cover 28, you blew out a team you're supposed to blow out, yada, yada, yada. But, like, if you play to expectation here, that's a good sign going forward. Similarly, if you don't play to to expectation here, win this game by 10, 14, 17, whatever the case may be, like, that's another red flag to me. So I did move Notre Dame down 3.5 points in my power ratings this week. And if they don't play well, I'll probably be forced to move them down again. And so don't just take for granted these blowout games, the expectations of blowouts, stuff like that. Because if a struggling team does what they're supposed to do, to me, that's meaningful. You know, if a struggling team doesn't do what they're supposed to do, that's an even more damning case against them.
So I look back at some game of the year lines. These were from South Point. I'll hit a couple. Miami, Florida. This was 3 in the offseason. It's now 7.5. And I got a text from a buddy of mine who said, man, this Florida line is confusing me. I guess he thought it should be higher. And I totally understand that. I was on Florida last week. That was a maddening loss. DJ Lagway was a nightmare. I still think this Florida team is talented. And you're right. Maybe Miami is a wagon. And I was hosting last night on primetime, Adam, with Will Hill. And he said, is Miami worth a national championship bet? They got the talent, it certainly feels like. I don't know what to do with this game. I'm probably going to take Florida and hate myself. Like, DJ Lagway threw 5 interceptions on the road at LSU. It's going to be a juiced up atmosphere again. Do we see Florida be competitive, or do we write this team off? I go back to last year. They were embarrassed by Miami, and they bounced back as the season went on. This number, if it stays at 7.5, I might find myself on the Gators here. What do you make of Miami and Florida? This preseason number was 3, and now it's 7.5.
Yeah, I have it 9.5 based on what we've seen here so far this season. But with that being said, you just mentioned it. DJ Lagway threw 5 interceptions against LSU. Florida gave up 20 points in that game. Like, LSU should have blown them out. When you're plus 5 in turnover margin like that, I mean, that should be an absolute rout, and it wasn't. And I think that's a pretty good sign for Florida going forward, where, you know, obviously there's a lot of discontentment, I guess I would say, with Billy Napier and everything that's going on there with this team. But as you mentioned, I mean, last year he went on a run that effectively saved his job. So is he able to do that again here? I don't know. I think it's a very reasonable question. Yeah, it's a pretty big adjustment, you know, coming off of the week. And honestly, or off the games of the year lines. And look, I'll say this. I mean, I bumped Miami 2.5 points off of what they did last week. So I would have this game at 7 if I hadn't bumped them up, because I didn't touch Florida at all. So we'll find out if I made the right decision in bumping up the Hurricanes. But again, when you have 5 interceptions against and you only give up 20 points, like, that's a pretty impressive defensive showing for an LSU team that had, you know, one of the Heisman favorites in Garrett Nussmeier at quarterback. So I think that's a good sign for Florida going forward, so long as Lagway is able to take care of the ball. But also, I'm not overly impressed with him either. So maybe this is an under type of game. Maybe Florida's the first team to really slow down Carson Beck in that offense. That's something I'll be looking at as the week goes along.
All right, let's wrap with this. A couple of spots that we've circled. We'll do more of the situational angles with Wes on the Wednesday podcast. But look, a spot that I've circled all year in the preseason was this week, Memphis hosting Arkansas. Number sits at 7.5. Arkansas's offense has really looked the part. And the thing that jumped out to me from a situational angle is you come off the Ole Miss game, they lose that game, and then next week they host Notre Dame, which doesn't have the same, you know, I guess, pomp and circumstances as maybe you would think nationally, but certainly down there in Fayetteville, now they think they really have a shot to beat Notre Dame. So is there a bit of a look ahead there for Arkansas with Notre Dame waiting in the wing? So that one certainly jumped out to me. And then I think a game that you and I don't know if you have placed a bet on it, but I took East Carolina plus 7.5 against BYU. Weird travel spot. Obviously, BYU was off last week. So far this year, look, Bear Bachmeyer's looked the part despite, you know, wearing number 47, which still just drives me crazy that a quarterback's wearing 47 in 2025. It's not 1933, but regardless, he's looked the part. But what have we seen so far this year? Not all of them, but a lot of these players, first true road environment. East Carolina gets this in prime time. This would be a juiced up atmosphere. I think East Carolina's got a chance to be a live dog here. So I like East Carolina, 7.5. I think it's still out there at FanDuel. That's a bet that I have made. So what do you make of East Carolina and BYU?
7's my number, but I got to be honest with you. I am loving the job that Blake Harrell is doing with East Carolina. Took over midseason last year for Mike Houston when he got canned, was the DC and the inside linebacker coach for 5 years prior to that. Gets his first crack as a head coach, and all they do is win with him. I mean, they won the Military Bowl last year over NC State. I know that they, you know, NC State got some revenge in that game here this year, but Blake Harrell is just a really, really good head coach, I think. So, yeah, I'm a fan of him. If I was to do anything with it, I would take East Carolina. It is a very, very weird travel spot. But I got to say, the other game that you mentioned here, I'm laying it with Arkansas. I have Arkansas a 10-point favorite in this game. I think Memphis is bad. I think Brendan Lewis is bad, the starting quarterback that they got from Nevada, who, by the way, speaking of Nevada, good Lord, how the hell do you lose to Middle Tennessee State at home with a 13-point lead late in the fourth quarter? Just miserable for the team from Reno up there. But I think Arkansas boat races Memphis. I do not like this Memphis team at all whatsoever. They badly miss Seth Hennigan. They badly miss some of the NFL caliber talent that they had at wide receiver and running back. Arkansas should be able to name the score here. I know they're upset about what happened last week, but I think they should be able to name the score here in a game that, you know, geographically does matter to them, especially you think about recruiting purposes. You know, there's some talent there in Tennessee. There's some talent there in the Memphis area. It's an important game for Arkansas, and I think they put an ass kicking on Memphis. I really, truly do.
All right. We'll wrap with this. You could read all of his content over at vsin.com. You always look to look a little off the radar. Any other games based off of your power ratings worth a look for week number 4?
I think this Rice and Charlotte move is fascinating for Thursday night. I know a friend of the podcast, used to do a weekly guest spot on VSiN. He's not doing it this season, but a good buddy of mine, Brad Powers, he caught Charlotte at +6.5 at the open here, and this one's down to 2.5. Ugly game on Thursday night. There's no doubt about it. Standalone game. People are going to bet it anyway. But I thought that was a pretty interesting line move. I like the under 42.5 in that one, actually. These are two teams that create virtually zero explosive plays on offense. So I think we could have a real slugfest there in that one. Interesting to see Iowa up to 3 against Rutgers, where I think Rutgers has been pretty impressive here so far this season. And Iowa once again has a quarterback who struggles to throw a forward pass. So I think Rutgers is kind of interesting there. One that is, I guess, off the radar, but it is tops on the board by rotation number. Give me North Texas against Army. I mean, I totally agree with that line move. Flip favorite situation. I only have North Texas a 0.5-point favorite, but the offense is legit. Drew Mestemaker, he knows how to play the quarterback position despite not really playing it in high school. And Skylar Cassidy, their DC, he's legit. He's a dude. He's going to be a head coach in the Sun Belt probably in the not too distant future here. So I think they shut down that Army option. So I do like North Texas in that one. One other one I want to mention. You know, we didn't talk about this as a spot, but UNLV going to Oxford, Ohio to take on Miami.
Yeah.
Miami sucks, though. I think Miami is awful this season. Blake Gabbert's not there anymore. Brett Gabbert, not there anymore. Daquan Finn not doing much with this offense, but man, is that a strange spot for the Rebels. And also, again, Miami has not looked the part. UNLV has looked pretty decent. We've gone through the key number of 3 down to 2.5 here. Very, very telling line move on the Red Hawks.
Yeah, and your average Joe is not betting Miami, no. UNLV. So yeah, we saw that. I saw the board light up on Sunday, 3.5 down to 2.5, maybe Monday morning. And I was like, whoa, all right, someone... I don't know if it was a service release or something, but somebody was very interested in that.
I mean, of course, keep in mind, I mean, Akron took boatloads of money against Wyoming in week 1 and lost 10-0. So it happens.
Tough beat if you had Wyoming plus the points. Oof, that was rough.
Yeah, that was me. There. Yeah, that was, oh. Me. 3-0 at halftime and they can't cover 23.5.
Oh, yeah, that's rough. I'll wrap with this. Hawaii is going to be a bet for me. +3.5 is still out there. They play Fresno State. They should be getting a lot of pieces back. Micah Alejado I would anticipate is back after missing a couple of games with an ankle injury. A couple of their wide receivers, I think, should be back. So this is a massive game for the Bows out there. They kind of just slept walk through Portland State on Saturday night. But the late night, midnight Eastern game, I'll be taking points with the home dog and Hawaii plus 3.5. I believe FanDuel has 3.5. Let me double check that. Still would take 3, but if you can get the 3 in the hook, I believe, yeah, FanDuel 3.5 juice. So got to lay the 20 cents there. But I think Hawaii is more than live in that spot. And hopefully we get positive injury news regarding the Bows heading into that midnight Eastern game out there on the island. All right, Adam, that should do it. Anything, any parting words here on the podcast?
No, Louisiana and Eastern Michigan, definitely the game of the week.
Eastern Michigan got the cover, though.
Eastern Michigan's taking money, and they don't look good. And obviously, we talked about Louisiana already. And look, I mean, that's, you know, just as a little sidebar here real quick, like, that's why I look at games like that early in the week. Because to your point, like, Joe Sixpack is not betting Eastern Michigan on Sunday or Monday. Like, that's a pretty strong position to take. You know, if you like Eastern Michigan in that game, another weird travel spot, by the way, with the boys from Lafayette going up to Ypsilanti, Michigan. some weird spots this week. But yeah, I mean, it's important to keep in mind, like, UNLV, Miami of Ohio, like, Joe Public is not betting Miami of Ohio. So those are things where, you know, if you get later in the week and you're like, oh, UNLV is only a 2.5-point favorite? Well, there's a reason for that, because somebody with influence took Miami earlier in the week. So just something for you to keep in mind as these lines mature, as they kind of go through their life cycle.
Yeah, UNLV, also that's a noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific time start. So Miami, or UNLV, is coming off the bye thanks to the Crawford and Canelo fight. They moved that Idaho State game up to week 0. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Please, as I mentioned, rate, review, and subscribe. Give us those 5-star ratings. Another week in the top 150 for the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. So much appreciated to you guys. And let's keep growing this YouTube page. We're going to get it rolling now over on YouTube. Look up College Football Betting Podcast. I'll put out the link as well. And hit that subscribe button up there. We're growing that. We just started it last week. Upwards around 50 subscribers, so let's keep growing that. But for Adam Burke, you could read his work over at vsin.com, at Skating Tripods on Twitter. I'm at One Tim Murray. We'll be back later this week, Wednesdays with Wes, and then Matt Humans will join the podcast on Thursday. That's going to do it for this edition of the VSin College Football Betting Podcast.